session number 24694, Reel 5.
Mr. Gabbett, Reel 5. We were talking about your time at Kamajara.
Kamajara.
Sorry.
Kamajaran.
Batavia. Pronounced the RAF base in Batavia. What sort of... So you would be working your basic duties almost as normal, you know, with the film and the camera.
Yeah, we had a small darkroom, a lorry darkroom, for loading and unloading the film magazines, and then the exposed films were put into tins, and one of 31 Squadron of Dakotas flew them back to Singapore where they were processed. So the drill was much the same, except the films had to go a bit further to get processed.
And how did you spend your time the rest of the time? Because that couldn't have taken too long of a day, or would it?
Oh yes, because don't forget, there was only one of each trade. There was one photographer, one fitter, one rigger. So one aircraft is flying and the other's under maintenance. And because there was only one, you were all mucking in and helping the other trades as much as possible. So if, for instance, they wanted to do a plug change or a prop change, I got roped in to help, just as the instrument repairer or the wireless op, they all did. So we all mucked in. It'd be no good saying, I am the photographer, I've cleaned the cameras, I'm knocking off, because you soon got told your fortune if you did. So it was quite busy, but we used to go out in the evening. I mean, all the restaurants and the bars and the clubs were going hard.
Did you have to be careful, I mean, with a sort of terrorist threat?
Yes, you never went out on your own. We didn't normally have any weapons with us. It was regarded that as more dangerous than not having them, particularly in our case. I mean, the RAF blokes were not particularly good firing weapons at anybody. It was sometimes it got... I mean, we went out, we got friendly with some Dutch girls because there was a women's internment camp about half a mile up the road, and one of the nicest restaurants was down near the docks on the water. And we were taking, Taffy and I had two Dutch girls, and we were going off for dinner in the dark, and the delightful Indos had stretched a wire cable across the road between two trees, because most people driving Jeeps in then had put the windscreen down, which meant they would not nicely have had their heads chopped off. Well, fortunately, we had the windscreen up, and the wire cable hit the windscreen, but I just put my foot down and we broke it and carried on, and that was the end of it. But it was a little bit off-putting.
What else happened there? You were there quite a while.
Yeah, as I say, we photographed, I should think, half the beaches. Right, I don't know what happened to all these photographs. Somewhere they went back to this country, and they were obviously stored for possible future use. they established a leave camp for officers on Bali, where they used to go down for a week's rest and recreation. And it was a 31 Squadron Dakota that took them down there and brought last week's back. And one of my chums was a flight sergeant pilot on 31 Squadron, and I scrounged a lift down to Bali. And before I went, I said to the CO, you know, is it all right? And he went to the Met office and was told it was going to be cloudy for the next two or three days, so yes, that was all right. So we trundled off from Batavia to Bali, and Bali might now be an international jet airport, but in those days it was a grass strip with one tin hanger and a windsock. But when we got down there, the DAC went US, and we couldn't come back. So in fact, we were down there for over 2 weeks while they flew out some replacement spares and flew them down to mend it. But the weather cleared, and the CO was getting requests for sorties, and of course he didn't have a photographer, so he couldn't. So I got back to find I wasn't very popular, but as I pointed out, you know, you said I could go, sir, and it was all right for me, but he got a right rocket for letting me do it. And then gradually the Dutch got more and more twitchy with the British there, because most of the British were more on the Indonesian side than they were on the Dutch.
How did you get on with the Dutch and the Indonesians? You can talk a bit about both of them.
Well, the actual Dutch marines and soldiers were all right. They were nice blokes. I liked the Dutch. But the government side of it, no. Because in their opinion, the Dutch were rotten colonisers. I mean, whereas in, say, places like India, we tried to put something back as well as what we took out, the Dutch purely used the countries to exploit them for what they got: rubber, tin, teak. And if you looked at a map of Java in those days, there was a superb set of roads between the rubber plantation and the port, or the teak forest and the port, but nothing else. And they didn't encourage the Indonesians to make themselves any better. I mean, the Dutch Indonesian army, there were no Indos above the rank of sergeant. So on that side of it, no, we didn't get on very well with them, but, I mean, individuals, yes. The Indonesians, very nice bunch of people. We got on very well with them. We didn't have so much to do with them as we did with the Dutch, because the Indos tended to take the fact that you're white, so you're one of them. They didn't bother to find out whether you were one of them English or one of them Dutch.
But they weren't particularly hostile when you got to...
No, no.
Now, anything else happened while you were at Indonesia?
Well, I'm thinking, I don't think so. I mean, you know, we carried on. We took about 3 months. We then got rumours that the British were pulling out of Java.
Ah, but first, I think you got an ear infection. Can you tell us that story?
Oh, yes. We used to go swimming in the sea. And Taffy and I had taken our two Dutch girls out for dinner. And about 9 o'clock one night, my right ear, I think it was, I suddenly got violent earache. And it really got bad. So much so that, in fact, Taffy, we abandoned the evening, and Taffy ran me back to sick quarters, and the duty MO looked in my ear and said I'd got an abscess in the middle ear, which needed treatment urgently. So I was whipped straight down to the local Indian Army hospital in the centre of Batavia, what had been a nunnery. And by 12 o'clock, I'd been done. I'd had my ear lanced and was back in bed feeling an awful lot better. I was kept in for nearly a fortnight because they were more concerned that with an open wound in my ear, I'd get infection in it. So they kept me in just under observation. And that was where, I think the story I may have told you, the army...
Well, we haven't heard that. Can you tell us?
Oh, sorry. Well, a couple of days after I'd had my op, an army bloke was brought in with an ear infection, but he was also under close arrest on a charge of attempted rape. So he was put in a bed in the ward, but he had two army blokes there with rifles on guard. And when they started, their sergeant major every 2 hours would change the sentry. So we'd have Obnell boots stamping around in the ward all night, every 2 hours. We had a bit, you know, it wasn't really long before we'd had enough of this. So he was told in no uncertain terms that if he didn't do something about it, his two soldiers were going to finish up outside in the road. So after that, they changed the guard in plimsolls, and life got a lot quieter.
Now, how did your time at Java come to an end? About December 46.
Yeah, well, a couple of months before that, we knew something was going to happen, because an order came down from Singapore that there'd be no further spares and the like sent. We had to make do with what we got. And then it was decided that we'd go back to Singapore. So the two, we went on a boat called the ECMAR. I've never forgotten that, because we called it the Altmark. EKMA. It was an old Dutch liner. Dreadful thing. Fortunately, it was only a two-day trip from Batavia to Singapore. And the two aircraft flew back to Salita. We got back to Singapore and went back to Salita and rejoined the squadron. Except that by then it wasn't 681 anymore. Because while we were down in Java, 681 had gone back to India. And our detachment had been posted to 81 Squadron. The only thing was they hadn't told us, so we got back to Singapore looking for 681 to find it wasn't there anymore.
And what exactly was 81 Squadron? Was it?
It was a PR squadron. It became the PR squadron. They just renumbered it.
And what do you remember about your second stint?
Well, it wasn't that long because I was getting close to the boat list. See, when I first went out, a single man's tour was 4 years and a married man's was 3 years. Well, then they cropped the single man and made it 3 years for everybody, by which time I'd done about 2.5 years, so I was getting close to the boat list.
Now, there are a couple of things that we want to pick up that happened at Salita. One is the mutiny.
It's Salita.
Salita. I'm going to get that wrong every time. Sorry about that. What the mutiny?
The strike.
Was this the strike? Quite right. Was this strike before you went to Java?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, let's deal with that.
Not long before. Well, it was. I mean, I never did find out what started it, but I mean, it was about the fact that DMOB was not taking place very quickly, and the vast majority of the blokes in the RAF were not regulars. I mean, they were wartime conscripts, most of them. So there was a lot of unrest, and nobody could find out what the devil was going on. So somebody organised it, and the word went round that there was going to be a meeting in the NAFI, and we all went to the NAFI, and all the lights were turned out, so everybody was in the dark, so you couldn't hear who was speaking. And basically, it was that if they don't do something, we're going to quit, stop work. So there came the day when the first morning parades, there was nobody there apart from the officers and the senior NCOs. All the IRCs had stayed in their billets.
Now, you weren't that involved, I presume, because you weren't not coming up for this, were you?
No, not terribly involved, no. And it really blew up. Went on for, I don't know, several days. And eventually, the AOC&C came down with his staff.
Hang on a bit. So what was happening? Did you not go to work that day then?
No, nobody did.
Nobody did.
So that's not quite true. The people that couldn't knock off, like the firemen, like the medical staff, like the cooks, they all did. Yeah, and the wireless operators did, went in as well. But everybody else of the junior ranks quit.
Did anybody try and persuade you not to, before the senior command arrived?
Yes, the CO did. But he didn't have any success. None of them did.
Remember what he said? Vaguely.
Well, he kept it low-key. I mean, there were no threats of court-martials and for mutiny and things like that. It was, I suppose, if you go back to work and keep quiet, things will be done to make it better, that sort of thing. He'd obviously been told to keep things in a low key. And then the AOC came down, and obviously there'd been a lot of cables between Singapore and the UK and the Air Ministry, and we were told that if we all went back to work, he undertook that, or he had been told to tell us that DMOB would be speeded up remarkably.
Now, who is this AOC? Do you remember his name?
No, Pierce had gone by then. I can't remember his name, I'm sorry.
How did the men react?
Well, yeah, there was another meeting held in the dark again, and it was a bit inconclusive, but the majority really were give them a chance and see if it works. And so people went, you know, the squadron went back.
Now, do you know who actually organised it? Because someone must have organised it.
They did. I mean, there were rumours it was communists, but I can't comment, I just don't know. Honestly, I haven't the faintest idea. It spread because the wireless operators in Singapore were telling their chums in Bombay and places like that what was going on, so it wasn't just Singapore that came out.
And you were sympathetic to the...
Well, yes, because DMOB, repat for DMOB, was going extremely slowly. And bearing in mind that all of us wanted to get home and get out and get on with our civilian life, because we weren't regulars, I wasn't quite as bothered because my boat list was tour expired, was fairly close anyway, so I would have been going home fairly soon, whatever happened. And when it finished, I mean, some of the senior NCOs wanted to really delve into who started it and court-martial them and so forth, but it was played down by the brass and the CO as, you know, let sleeping dogs lie, it's over, and we don't want a lot of publicity, because some of the Chinese newspaper reporters, who also were stringers for UK papers, had been sniffing around, and the last thing the RAF wanted was a big fuss made. So it really died very quietly. But then the boat list, I wasn't on it yet, so my pal Taffy and I again decided that Salita had got a bit too peacetime Air Force.
And that's when he went to Java.
And we come back from Java and it got even more so.
I thought you said the mutiny was just before you went to Java.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm jumping, aren't I? Because, yes, then I went to Java, which we've talked about. Then we came back from Java.
The other two things you mentioned you wanted to talk about were these leave periods where you went to local leave.
Well, I had one local leave long before up in... when we were still based at Alipur in Calcutta. I had 28 days up in Shillong in Assam. And then came the second leave period after we got back from Java, when again we decided that it was a bit too much like the peacetime Air Force, and we hadn't had any leave at all then for 18 months. So Taffy and I both put in for 28 days leave, which we got, and we went up to a rest and recreation centre on Penang Island, just off the coast of Malaya, quite close to where we landed, in fact. And we'd had about 3 weeks of our leave when we get a signal through from the squadron that the boat list is in and we're both on it, so come back quick because all is forgiven. And obviously that was the one boat list we did not want to miss.
But that would be February 47. That's when it says you came back to UK.
Yeah, that's when we got back. Yes.
So January, February, yeah.
Yes. But you had to go by launch across to the mainland and catch a train back to Singapore. Well, there are only two trains a week. So we go out for a last night out before we catch the train the next morning. Had a very nice night, but we missed the train. So, of course, there's a big panic, you know, because there's not a train for another 3 days and we don't want to miss the boat. So we scrounged a lift on a launch across to Butterworth, which was the RAF station on the coast opposite Penang Island, and went into flying confusion to flying control and said, have you got any aircraft going back to Singapore this half today? And the controller had a look and said, yes, we've got a Dakota going back this afternoon. So we said, any chance of a lift? Well, he said, the pilot, he told us who he was, he said he's in the SNCO's mess having tiffin, told us his name, go and ask him. So we went and asked him. He said, yeah, no trouble at all. So we get a lift on this Dakota, which is going back to Tenga, which is another airfield on Singapore Island. And off we go. And we noticed that the deck was a bit more disreputable and clapped out than most wear. And the pilot came back to use the toilet, and we said to him, "It's a bit clapped out, this deck, isn't it?" He said, "Yes, it's going back to be broken up," which didn't please us very much. However, he said, "Where are you going?" So we said, "Well, Salita." He said, "Oh, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll lob in at Salita, taxi over to flying control, drop you two off, and then just hop across to Tenga," which is what he did. So, in fact, we got back to Salita quicker than if we come back on the train. The only amusing thing about it was we had to book in at the guardroom with our leave passes. And you try and explain to SPs how come you're booking in from inside the station when you should be outside trying to get in. And they wouldn't believe us. In fact, in the end, they rang up Tenga and spoke to the pilot to check our story. But we got in. We got demobbed. Not demobbed, sorry. We got cleared from the station. And off we went to get on the boat to come home, which was the Queen of Bermuda.
What was the trip like?
Well, it took about a month. But we were supposed to go from... call in at Colombo, which we did, and then go straight across the Indian Ocean, up the Red Sea, and keep going. But the Queen Bee at that time was only about half full. And they then realised that there were about 1,000 RAF blokes in Bombay waiting for a boat. So they diverted the Queen Bee to Bombay to pick these chaps up. The only trouble was that the transit camp there hadn't been told, so they'd given them all local leave. So we had about 4 or 5 days tied up in Bombay Harbour, going ashore for the day until these blokes had all been got together, and off we went. And then we went from there across the Indian Ocean, up through the Red Sea, up through the Suez Canal, back into the Med. But we just left, well, not long left Port Suez. Yeah, Port Suez. When we ran into a gale, and for about 4 days, the Queen Bee was just hove to, just not going anywhere, just keeping its head into the wind. Because we found out that the Queen of Bermuda was designed for cruising from New York to Bermuda in peacetime, and Bermuda was very shallow, so the Queen Bee was flat-bottomed. And so when it came into this gale, it rolled like nobody's business. It really was dreadful. And fortunately, neither Taffy nor I got seasick, so we were eating like fighting cocks, whereas all over the ship there were dead bodies. I mean, literally, blokes just lay down on a blanket, pulled it over the head, and died. Didn't surface for about 3 or 4 days. Well, we ran out of the gale in the end, came back and landed at Liverpool in February. Right in that, February 47 was the coldest winter that they'd had for years, and we just come straight back from Singapore. I mean, we felt like getting back on the boat and going back again. It was so cold. I still wasn't up for demob. My demob group was 52. And when we left Singapore, they were up to 50. And I didn't want them to go up to 52 before I got back, because if they hadn't, I'd get 28 days disembarkation leave. If they had, I'd have gone straight and got demobbed without any disembarkation leave. I'd have got me demob leave. Well, when we got to Liverpool, I was very pleased to find they got up to 51. So I got 28 days disembarkation leave. I went home. When the leave was nearly up, they still hadn't got up to 52. So I was posted to Scampton. Scampton or Stranishall, I can't remember.
Scampton,
yeah.
And what duties were you? Were you there as a photographer? Or were you just there as
I went straight at the SHQ photographic section.
SHQ meaning?
Station headquarters. I wasn't on a squadron. I was on the main... Well, didn't really care what I was on, because I knew I'd be coming out within a few weeks.
Do you have any actual duties?
Oh, the usual, taking identity card photographs. The only thing that was of interest was that 57 Squadron, I think it was, that was there with Lancaster, sent a goodwill mission to Copenhagen, because the Royal Danish Air Force was setting itself up again back home. And they sent four Lancs on a goodwill mission, but they hadn't got a photographer. And I was the only one in the section with any experience at all, because apart from the flight sergeant in charge, all the rest were rookies. So I got sent with this goodwill mission. So we had 4 or 5 days, something like that, in Copenhagen. And we had a hell of a time. Superb. I don't think I was sober for about 5 days. Then I got back to Scampton and the DMOB. My number came up, 52. So I was out.
What was the demobilisation process? How did they, get you out?
You were posted from wherever your unit was, in my case, Scampton, to a demobilisation centre. And I'd been very pleased because there was one at Uxbridge. And at that time, I lived in Ealing. Unfortunately for me, 2 weeks before I came out, they closed down Uxbridge, so I went to Blackpool. So I had to flog all the way from Scampton up to Blackpool, and 2 days later, all the way back from Blackpool, down to London. Trying to remember now. You went through all the process of pay accounts, your leave entitlement, getting your civilian, your DMOB suit and that sort of thing.
What was it like?
Well, my suit, not bad actually. I had a grey chalk striped suit, wasn't bad. I wore it for quite a while. It was the only suit I had, in fact. You kept your RAF greatcoat and your shoes and your shirts and your tie and your underwear, but you had to give up your uniforms. And then I came back down to London